Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Pre-Enforcement Challenges to Administrative Compliance Orders Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 9, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Sackett v. EPA. This case involves two landowners who graded a lot in a residential subdivision so that they could build a home there. The Environmental Protection Agency then issued to the landowners an administrative compliance order stating that the graded lot was a wetland and directing the landowners to either remove the fill and restore the lot to its original condition or risk civil fines in the amounts of thousands of dollars for each day of noncompliance. The question before the court is whether the landowners may seek judicial review of the EPA's compliance order before it is actually enforced against them, and if the answer to that question is no, whether the compliance order deprives the landowners of due process of law. To discuss the case, we have Elizabeth Pepez, who is a partner at Winston & Strawn, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Pepez.
This is Elizabeth Pepez from Winston & Strawn to discuss the recent Supreme Court argument in number 10-1062, Sackett versus the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA. For those who don't already know, this is the case that involves agency action against private homeowners that Justice Alito said ordinary people would think can't happen in the United States. Given the fact, it's almost somewhat surprising that the government didn't maybe take steps to moot the case, but be that as it may, it's now before the Supreme Court, and it's an important case to watch for anyone whose personal or business activities involve EPA, and also for anyone who deals with regulatory agencies more generally, because the basic issue is when and how a person or business can get judicial review of an agency action that severely impairs their property interests. I'll start with a quick summary of the facts and legal questions and then talk a little bit about what happened at the argument and what it suggests about the scope and importance of the issues the court is being asked to decide. The petitioners, Michael and Chantel Sackett, are an Idaho couple who purchased an approximately half-acre lot in a residential subdivision near a lake. Their goal was to build their family home there, so they obtained local permits and began construction. Shortly thereafter, they received an order from the EPA. The order stated that their lot qualified as a wetland and that they had violated the Federal Clean Water Act when they poured gravel fill on the lot to prepare their foundation. The order then stated that unless they restored the lot to its pre-construction condition and took various other environmental protection measures, they would be liable for up to $37,500 per day in fines. The order also compelled them to give EPA virtually unfettered access to the property itself and to all of their records concerning the property. Because the Sacketts did not believe that their lot actually qualified as a wetland, they asked EPA for a hearing to reconsider the compliance order. The EPA refused, and the Sacketts then filed a lawsuit asking a federal district court to hold that their lot was not a protected wetland and to order the EPA to vacate the compliance order. EPA moved to dismiss the suit for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, arguing that the Clean Water Act did not permit judicial review of the order, at least until such time as EPA itself sought to enforce its penalty provisions in court. The district court agreed with the EPA and dismissed the case. The Ninth Circuit affirmed. It began by observing that the Clean Water Act did not expressly provide for review of the compliance order. It then held that although the Sacketts had protected constitutional interests in the use of their property, immediate judicial review of the compliance order was not necessary to protect those interests. The first reason they gave was that there were other ways for the Sacketts to get their challenge to the order into federal court. Specifically, the Ninth Circuit said the Sacketts could raise their wetlands challenge as a defense to any EPA penalty enforcement action against them. The second reason they gave is that the Sacketts could try to raise their wetlands objection in the course of seeking a wetland construction permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. The question before the Supreme Court is whether the Ninth Circuit erred in holding that the Sacketts had no right to immediate judicial review of the compliance order. The Sacketts' brief says they do indeed have such a right because the Clean Water Act does not prohibit court review of the compliance order, and judicial review of agency action is long and usually presumed. Further, the Sacketts argue that failure to allow judicial review of the order now would unconstitutionally deprive them of any meaningful review of the agency's invasion of their property rights. While the compliance order is in effect, they can't use their property to build their home, nor can they sell the lot free of the challenged restrictions on it. The order thus significantly impairs their constitutional property interests, and the agency's refusal to hear their challenge to the order makes the order final and ripe for court review at their behest. Any other decision, they say, including one that requires them to wait for EPA to start an enforcement action, would put them to the impossible choice of giving up the use of their land until EPA chooses to act, or forcing the agency to act by violating the order and subjecting themselves to millions of dollars in potential penalties. The government's brief responded that the Clean Water Act does not make the compliance order itself immediately reviewable for a host of reasons, beginning with the fact that it is not actually final agency action. According to the government, even though EPA refused the Sacketts' request for a hearing, the agency could still revisit their case, and even if it does not, the order simply embodies what the statute itself already requires and doesn't allow EPA to do anything on the penalties without going to court, where the Sacketts could raise their defenses and other arguments in that case. Further, the government said that the agency's permitting procedures are indeed an adequate and constitutionally sufficient way for the Sacketts to initiate review of their arguments if they don't want to wait for an EPA enforcement action. According to the government, the Sacketts could or maybe should have sought a wetlands permit before they began construction. The government's view is that they could have avoided the compliance order that way, and that even now the Sacketts could seek what's called an after-the-fact permit, and in the course of asking for that, raise the argument that their lot does not qualify as a wetland. The Supreme Court argument was a lively one with lots of questions for both sides, though I think the court's exchanges with the government were the most revealing. The court began with questions that seemed to show some concern about whether the petitioner's position would open the floodgates to judicial review of routine agency warnings and citations. Justice Kennedy in particular pressed the petitioner's lawyer to explain why the compliance order here is different from typically unreviewable citations from fire marshals or health inspectors, stating that any violation of their citation would subject the recipient to statutory penalties. The petitioner's lawyer replied that the compliance order itself had the force of law and, unlike a warning, immediately impaired the Sacketts' property interests. And that, in turn, prompted some questions about whether the order really did that. Remember, the government was saying that all the order did was restate what the statute already required by way of environmental compliance. And the argument from petitioners is that that wasn't true because the Sacketts could face fines for violating the order itself in addition to the statute. And that prompted the Chief Justice to ask whether the amount of the fines in issue mattered. The petitioner's counsel said no, because the fact of the matter is the order imposed fines above and beyond what the statute did. That triggered a right by the Sacketts to go to court at their own behest to have the order reviewed. And no matter what the amount of the fine was, the government's position in the case did not allow for such review at their behest and therefore didn't provide meaningful opportunity for review of their constitutional rights against the agency action. That was really not the extent of the petitioner's side. It got a little bit sticky at the end of the argument because in the course of explaining why these other avenues would be inadequate, the petitioner focused on the importance of APA, arbitrary and capricious review, to an extent that seemed to cause the court to question whether such a review would be appropriate or productive on the kind of non-formal administrative record underlying the compliance order. But notwithstanding that stickiness, the court's questions for the government seemed quite a bit tougher. Interestingly, Deputy SG Malcolm Stewart began by volunteering that the order could indeed subject the Sacketts to double penalties, up to $37,500 a day for violating the statute, and another $37,500 a day for violating the order itself. That was interesting and somewhat surprising because that concession seemed to undercut the argument in the government's briefs that the order did nothing more than memorialize what the statute already required. The double penalties concession seemed to suggest that the compliance order did, in fact, have independent legal and practical force. In response to that, Justices Scalia and Alito emphasized that these features of the order and the additional features that required the Sacketts to do things that the statute apparently didn't compel evidence the high-handed and outrageous, those are Justice Scalia and Alito's words, nature of the agency's approach. The government went on to concede in response to pointed questioning from the Chief Justice as well as Justices Scalia, Alito, and Kagan that the government's position on judicial review left the Sacketts in a, quote, unattractive position with, quote, limited options. The government essentially admitted that the Sacketts would either have to forego their planned use of their property, violate the order to trigger an enforcement suit and the risk of huge financial penalties, or pursue a permit application they didn't think they needed in the first place. And the government further admitted in response to pressing questions from Justice Breyer that the option of an after-the-fact permit was really illusory here because the Army Corps was unlikely to entertain the application while the compliance order was in effect. On that score, on the argument that the compliance order nevertheless was not final agency action because it invited the Sacketts to contact EPA, Justice Ginsburg pretty quickly pointed out that the Sacketts did that and were denied a hearing. Justices Breyer and Kagan also seemed to share her skepticism of that finality argument and distinguished the compliance order from routine warnings. And then Justice Kagan and Scalia, frankly, characterized as weird the government's contention that the Sacketts should seek to vindicate their constitutional rights by seeking a wetlands permit for land they did not believe to be a wetland. The government didn't fare much better in arguing that the APA review would be inappropriate because the EPA order wasn't based on a full record. In fact, that prompted the court to say again that it seemed outrageous to subject homeowners to this kind of burden if the EPA hadn't even done a rigorous evaluation of the property in the wetlands question. So all in all, I think the argument revealed some pretty clear skepticism of the government's position. There's obviously no way to predict with accuracy in any case what the court will do, but if I had to guess, I would expect a reversal here. I think the interesting part will be to see what an opinion reversing would look like and how many votes it gets. I think to get a unanimous opinion here or a substantial majority of the court, the opinion would need to be written in a way that doesn't open the door to a flood of federal suits challenging agency warning or citation type actions. That, I think, is clearly doable on this record. The case could be analogized to exhaustion cases given the EPA's refusal to entertain the Sacketts' request for a hearing. And obviously there are many ways EPA could insulate itself down the road from any decision on judicial review here by affording more process on these orders or in its regulations. So the bottom line is, you know, if I had to guess, I'd expect that the court will reverse here. I think it's certainly an important case for all EPA-regulated persons and businesses to watch. The statistics in the brief said that the, you know, permitting and wetlands Clean Water Act-type procedures here involve some $1.7 billion annually in permitting costs and proceedings, so it's economically significant. The parties also pointed out that the EPA's definition of wetlands and land that's subject to Clean Water Act regulation is incredibly broad and frankly vague, and so it's an important case to watch too to see what the court will say about whether and when someone should believe that they need to go and seek a pre-construction permit to avoid the kind of situations at issue here. I think finally it's an important case to watch for any entity that deals with regulated agencies more generally because a lot of the principles in the case are not unique to EPA or environmental law. The Chamber of Commerce, in its brief, does a terrific job of distinguishing the compliance order process here from a lot of other agency processes, even the most exigent of which are subject to some form of judicial review. But, you know, again, that said, the cases in the parties' briefs, the Supreme Court cases that control the issue here, basically when and under what circumstances a party can obtain judicial review of an agency action, are not limited to environmental law. They are cases in a wide range of regulated industries, and they've cropped up in other cases. In fact, we just had one recently. We prevailed for a healthcare client in the D.C. Circuit in an appeal from a 12B1 dismissal against Health and Human Services in the DOJ. They moved to dismiss our client's case on very similar grounds that the government is taking in the Sackett case. And we prevailed in the D.C. Circuit in an argument that the government's position essentially cut off any meaningful opportunity for judicial review of a healthcare regulation that effectively put clients out of business by denying them Medicare reimbursement. So these issues that are in these briefs and that are in this case are likely to crop up in other areas. So again, it's an important case to watch for EPA entities and also for those who deal with regulatory agencies more broadly. It'll be interesting to see what the court decides.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.